Today, we have the great fortune of having Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, an internationally acclaimed Bible scholar and pioneer of Jewish education on the internet, who is well known in the Jewish community for his essays on the weekly Bible portion. His vibrant thematic analytical approach blends the methods of modern academic scholarship with traditional Jewish approaches to the biblical text. He is best known for his ability to teach students how to study rather than how to simply read biblical passages. As his essays focus on meta-themes in the Bible, his readership has expanded to students of the Bible from all religions and all walks of life. In Israel, Rabbi Liebtag teaches at Yeshivat Har Etzion, Yeshivat Shalavim, Midrashet Lindenbaum. He also routinely lectures around the globe, primarily as a scholar in residence in communities in North America, and is a regular guest lecturer for students at such universities as Columbia, Harvard, Princeton, NYU, Penn, and Brandeis. Please give your undivided attention, and it's a great honor to welcome Rabbi Liebtag. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. This Shabbat, we're going to read the Torah, which we do every week. And everyone knows where we're going to start from today, I mean this week. Yeah. Which, I think that's what the word means. Now, almost every book that you study in school goes like this. You begin with the first chapter, and you end with the end of the year. Meaning, we never finish the books, do we? Unfortunately, but it's okay. But at least in the beginning, we know. Now, is there anything that the first chapter of Bereshit has to do with Jewish life? Like day-to-day, or week-to-week Jewish life? That's easy, right? What's probably the most important day of the week in Judaism? Shabbat. And there's a story about Shabbat from the beginning, right? What I want to do with you today is I want to help make your Shabbat a little more meaningful based on what the story is about. And everyone knows the story of creation, right? How many days of creation are there? Yeah? Seven? Anyone disagree? So let's take a vote, okay? Who says there's 6 days of creation? Okay? And who says there's 7 days of creation? Is there a democracy in Canada?
A little more than in the United States.
You understand? It's about half and half, without counting votes, counting hands. Half of you said there's 6 days of creation, half of you said seven. How come there's an argument? What does the Torah say? Yeah? Louder? On the seventh day, God rested from what? He rested from? From working, right? Is that part of creation? That's a good question, right? That sounds more like philosophy. So listen, we're going to try to figure that out by doing something really simple. In the Torah, we have what's called format. You know what that word means? F-O-R-M-A-T? Things are formatted. Every day of creation, this is a real easy one. How does every day of creation end? Do you remember that? Every day of creation ends a certain way. What phrase do we always have at the very last day? Yeah? Louder? That's a good answer, and it's half right. Okay? 50. That's what I mean. It's true almost everything in creation is good. Who says it's good? Hashem does. But what does Chumash say at the very end of every day of creation? Yeah? Vayer Vayboker Yom X. If you know algebra, you guys know? So in algebra, Vayer Vayboker Yom blank. Yom X. Now, look at the sheet I gave you. You don't have to understand Hebrew to understand the sheet. We'll do the English part later on. Good. It'll come up later. But look at the Hebrew sheet. It goes from right to left. Okay, see the numbers? Every day of creation has a little circle next to it. And just look at the sheet real quickly. And notice how every single day ends. With what phrase? It's real simple, right? Every day ends with Vayera Vayboker, yeah? Okay, I'm calling you in a minute. Okay? Except for what? Look at day one. What's the last phrase on day one? Vayera Vayboker. Day two, Vayem Rabokir Yom Shini. Got it? You catching on? How about Shabbat? Does Shabbat end like all the other days? It doesn't. Okay. So we might have to vote again. Okay. Now go back. How does every day begin? Take a look carefully. How does every day begin? Yeah, what you want to say? Exactly. Every day begins with Vayomer Elokim. How can you see that? It's like, it's real simple, isn't it? That's called format. Every day begins with Vayomer Elokim, which means, and God said. Oh, who's God talking to? You ever wonder? Do you ever wonder who God's talking to? You never bothered you, did you? Who's God talking to? Well, want to take a wild guess who's talking to? At least in day one, who's he talking to? Yeah, why? There's no one else to talk to. Yeah. Does God talk? That's a good question. It's called anthropomorphism. You ever learn about that? The Torah describes God in human terms. Not because God's human, but rather, in order for us to relate to God, it has to use a language that we can relate to. We know that God is, we don't know what God is. But in order to relate to God, the Torah talks about God in human terms. And God talks. Do you ever talk to yourself? Think so. Listen one time. And sometimes you talk to yourself without even words. But look carefully. God's talking to himself, but what's he talking about? Let's look at day one. See where it says day one? In Pasuk Gimel? What's the first thing that God says? Vayomer Elokim. Where's the light switch? Where's the light switch? I'm just joking. But it's for the fun of it. I was going to have the rabbi become God for a minute. And say, let there be light. And there was light. Now, God's saying something, isn't he? What's the first thing God says? Yihi Or. What would you call that in, is that a statement? Is that a command? What would you call that? It's a command, isn't it? If God's talking, giving a command, who's he commanding? Well, is he commanding us to turn off the lights? No. Yeah, well, look what happens next. God said, let there be light, and what happened? And there was light. You said he was talking to himself, right? So, who's fulfilling God's commands? He's doing it, right? So why can't it just say God made light? You follow? Do humans do things like that? Does anyone say, let's make a plane? And someone made a plane? Who did that? Huh? That's the right answer. It's a bad joke. The Wright brothers? No. Do humans do that? Do they think about doing things and then do it? That's very human, isn't it? We think all the time about doing things and we do things. But what enables us to do things like that? Do we just do things or do we think about them first? Well, it depends what we're doing. Eating, we don't think first, we just eat. But building a plane, we think about it. It's called an app, like designing an app. You do that, don't you? Now, so on day one, God makes light, doesn't he? Now, after God makes light, what does he do? Let's take a quick look. God says, let there be light. And then, who gave me that good answer before? You did, didn't you? What was that good answer? What does God say about the light? Actually, it's on the board, isn't it? And that was good. It's a good answer. And then God divided between light and day, and he gives out names. What did God call the light? Day, right? Yom. And the darkness he called night. That's a real simple day, right? Now, let's look at day two for a minute and see if it's the same format. Because every day begins with God speaking, and ends with the end of the day. But what happens on each day? Look at day two. What does God make? Or what does God say? See, we'll read together in Pasuk Vav. Who likes reading? Now, I don't want someone to volunteer. I want you to volunteer someone who reads. Volunteer someone who reads good. Aren't you going to volunteer somebody else? You guys don't have any friends. Want to volunteer somebody? What? Who's a volunteer? Okay. Want to read? No. Who likes reading? Someone likes reading. You guys are all bashful. What? When you guys want to read? Oh, always good. Good? Just read one line. And on day two, what's the first line? That's perfect, eh? You say, Nihim Rakia Betoch Hamai. What's that mean? Vector BA. What's a Rakia? What's it say up there? Look, it's wrong. What's a Rakia? What's it called, a Rakia in English? A sky. Now, is there really a sky or not? Who's in science class? Is there such a thing as a sky? Have you ever looked at the sky? Is there a sky? Is it really there or not?
No.
What do you mean no? I heard it's falling. Someone told me it was falling, I didn't believe him. No. In science class, is it really a sky or not? Depends what you mean by sky, doesn't it? But everyone sees the sky. Now, look again. God said, let there be a rakia betoch hamayim, and should divide between water and water. That's a command, isn't it? Is the command being fulfilled? Look at Pasuk Zayin in verse 7 up there. But we'll be there, up down a little bit. Page down. And what happened? Did God do it or not? See verse 7? Did God do it or not? You see the same pattern? God says, let there be a sky, and there was a sky. And he does it. Let's see if it happens on day 3. What happens on day 3? Is there a command followed by an execution? You catching on? Because every day of creation, that's what I want to get across. Every day of creation has a command followed by an execution. And here's what we're going to do. Now we have to wake up. Okay? We're going to try to figure out what is it that God made day by day. Because every day, before creation, what was there? Don't say nothing. Who said nothing? Everybody said nothing. You said nothing? Or you didn't say anything? According to Chumash, what was there before creation? There was chaos. In Hebrew? Perfect. Tohu vavohu. Whatever that means. Everything's met. And what happens when creation's over? Everything's nice and organized. Got it? Now, on every day, there's something that God makes that wasn't there before. Day one, light, remember? Day and night. Day two, there's a sky. What's the sky divide between? There's water everywhere. And what did the sky do? Some of the water put where? Up there, and some of the water you put down here. How do you say there in Hebrew? Sham, okay? And what do you call the water that's there? Sham, mayim. You know that word, don't you? You ever know that's why shamayim is called shamayim? Sham, mayim. It's simple. I think it's what it means. Sham, mayim. There's water there, and there's water down here also. What divides them? The rakia. Nice and simple? What does God make on day 3? There's water above, water below. What's missing? There's land. So what does God make on day 3? Land. Now we're simple. Look at day 4. What did day 4 yet? What does God make on day 4? Look carefully. Look, yeah? Look at the word in Hebrew on your page. He makes ma'orot. What are those? What's that? Luminaries. What do you mean by that? Give me a name for them in English. It's not only stars. The sun and the moon, right? Sun, moon, and stars. Now, God says to do it, and does he do it? Yeah. But look what happens on day 4. Did they get jobs or not? Let's look at day 4. What job does the sun get? Does the sun have a job or not? Yeah? Yeah? The sun is in charge of the day, and who's in charge of the night? The moon. Now, listen to this question. Listen carefully. Wouldn't it make a lot more sense if God put the sun in charge of the night instead of the day? What would we gain if the sun was out at night instead of the day? I'm not joking. Wouldn't it make more sense for God to give us the sun during the night when we need it? Why give us the sun during the day when it's light out anyhow? What? How come you guys are confused? I'm asking a good question. Who can tell me why my question's a good question? I'll explain my question again. I'm asking, why did God give us the sun during the day when it's light out? When there's aura, we should have the sun and light when it's dark out.
Because we already have the light.
You understand my question? It's not a joke. Yeah? That's louder. Oh, perfect. Okay, hit the nail on the head. What's your first name?
Jacob.
Jacob said something good. On day one, is there day and night? How do we know there's day and night on day one? That's what God made, didn't he? On day one, God made day and night, didn't he? It says so. And is there a sun and moon yet? No. What's that mean? That there's already day and night on day one. Don't you realize this isn't it's not a real story. You follow? I'm trying to explain to you that the story can't be understood literally. It's up to there to teach you something. But the story doesn't make sense with physics. It makes sense with God, we'll see in a minute. But day one, there's lightning, there's day and night. On day four, God gives the sun and the moon. But what's that mean? There's some connection between day one and day four, isn't there? So my question was, why is God giving us the sun during the day? I'll give you an example. If the sun is in charge of the day, when does he come to work? He comes a half hour late to work every day, doesn't he? You ever been up early? There's light outside, and the sun comes out about a half hour later. He comes to work every day, but he comes a half hour late. And when does he leave the office? About a half hour early? There's light outside when there's no sun, isn't there? Now, you learned in physics class that we get the light from the sun. That's not chumash. But day one and day four are related to one another, aren't they? And now the sun has a job. How about day five? Take a look at day five now. It begins with a command, doesn't it? What does God make on day five, Rhonda? No. What did God make on day five that didn't exist before? Yeah? All animals? Look carefully. Look at day five. What did God make on day five? Fish and fowl. Right? F-O-W-L? A bird. Fish and birds, correct? What did he make on day five? Which animals are missing? Land animals. Have you ever noticed that, like in biology class? Or whatever you call that. There's fish, and there's birds, and there's animals. Is there a museum of natural history? Chumash isn't the first person to notice that, is there? You knew that, didn't you? There's fish, there's fowl, and there's land animals. On what day did God make the fish and the fowl, the fish and the birds? On day five. What divides between the fish and the birds? Where are the fish floating or swimming? In the water. Which water? The water below. And where are the birds flying?
In the sky.
Is that, what day was that? Okay, so what day does day five match? No. On what day did God divide between the water up there and the water down there? That was on day two. Doesn't day two match day five? You with me? Day two matches day five because what did God make on day two? He divided between the water up there and the water below. Meet the Shamayim and the Amin. What does he make on day five? He populates the sky with birds. He populates the sea with fish. How come there's no land animals on day five? Because when does God make land? On day three. When does God make land animals? Make sense now? You catching on? Did you know that before or not? Okay, I'll review that for you. Don't you see what's going on? That's called format. You agree with me that Chumash is up to something? Got it? When you read Chumash, when you study Chumash, you'll notice that day one matches day four. Got it? That's why I made that stupid joke about the sun. Because God said or, Adam meant to or, you get ma'orot. You get the luminaries. Now, day one matches day four. They're not exactly the same, but they're related to one another. Day two matches day five. Understand how? The rakia divides between Shamayim and Yamin, between the sea and the heavens. And God populates them on day five. On day six, what did God make? He made land. And what's he make on day six? I mean, on day three, God made land. On day six, he makes animals. We're good? We didn't learn anything yet other than everything is parallel. And that's intentional. That's not by chance. Now we start the fun part. Because I think you guys are humans. And what day did God make humans? On day six, are you sure? Well, take a look. Every day of creation had one thing that was new. Agreed? There's one act of creation. Every day is good. Go back to day three for a minute. Let's go back to day three. Go back to day three. And look carefully at day three. What defined every day of creation? What did God do first? Look in your Hebrew side also. Vayomer Elohim. God says something, and he does it, and he evaluates it. Look carefully at day three, and how is day three different than every other day? I'll help you out a little bit. Look at the format. How's that? You see what happened on day three? How is day three different than day one and day two and day five and day four? There's two what? There's two commandments. Twice it says, Vayomer Elohim. Look on the Hebrew page for a minute. Make sure you notice it. Look on day three. You see two little stars in Pasuk Yud Aleph? On day three, there's two acts of creation. There's two commands, two executions, and two evaluations. So what's the first thing that God made on day three? The first thing that God made on day three was what? Was land, agreed? What's the second thing he makes on day three? Let's read it. See Pasuk Yud Aleph? Vayomer Elohim Tatshei Haaretz Deshe Esev Asvi Asdera Etz Pri Oseh Pri. What does God make? In English? Not just fruit, what else? Vegetables, right? Or grass and fruit. Like, do you ever learn? Do we do something like this every day when you're Jewish? Do we distinguish between vegetables and fruits? How do we do that? Some people have a custom before eating something to make a bracha. You ever see people do that? So we differentiate between, when we eat a vegetable, what bracha do we make? Berit Pri Adama, and we eat fruit, we say Berit Pri Eitz. You see where the source is from that? There's a reason for that. Now, but for some reason on day three, there's two separate acts of creation. What's the first one? God makes land. The second thing, God makes vegetation. Agreed? Now, are they connected? What's the connection between the first part of day three and the second part of day three? How did what? Wait, back in the back, yeah?
Can't grow fruit underwater.
Ah, exactly. Without land, you can't have trees and fruit. So I need land in order to get to fruit and vegetation.
Yeah.
Now, is there a difference between them, though? Listen carefully. I'll call it 3A and 3B. We'll go back to algebra again. Okay. What's 3A? 3 is day 3. A is the first thing God creates on day 3. 3B is the second thing. 3A is land. 3B is vegetation. They're related, aren't they? How are they different? Now go to science. How is 3A different than 3B? What changed on 3B that we didn't have in 3A? Where's chemistry? What changed on day three, in the middle of day three? What are we jumping from? Yeah? Okay, and what's different between land and vegetation? But you can't have vegetation without land.
Yeah.
But what's unique, how is vegetation different? Yeah, Jacob?
No life.
Did you say death?
I said no life.
No life, It's called inorganic, I think?
Yeah.
Organic, and now? Hey, we have life, don't we? Was there anything alive before day three?
No.
Nothing was living, and nothing was dying. Now, you might notice one day that anything that's alive dies. Teenagers don't realize that. When you get older, you'll figure that out. You understand? Everything alive dies. It's called organic. But before it dies, what can it do? It can reproduce itself. I'm sure you notice that. It's called nature. You've heard of nature, haven't you? Every living thing can reproduce itself. Where does Chumash say that? What's it saying? Look at the Hebrew. What does God say? That says, Asep Masriya Zera. What's that mean, Masriya Zera? Yeah? It there's seed. What does the seed do? And the same thing, the fruit has a seed. It gives. That's the nature of everything alive, isn't it? Everything alive has the ability to reproduce itself, and then it dies, and the next generation continues. It's called a species. Got it? Who made that system? Well, God made that system. But for some reason, there's a difference between 3A and 3B. For some reason, there's a separate command for 3 and 3B, but there's a link between them, isn't there? Now, let's wake up. Didn't we find a parallel between day 1 and day 4? That's my stupid joke about the sun. Day 2 and day 5, the birds and the... Not the birds and the bees. The birds and the fish, okay? And day 3 should be parallel to what day? To day 6. What should I expect to happen now on day 6? If there's two separate acts of creation on day 3 that are related, but there's a big jump between them, what should happen on day 6? There should be two acts of creation. Are there? Yeah. And what are the two acts of creation on day 6? What's the first one? Land animals. And what's the second one? Humans. Got it? You catching on? You understand what the format's going on? Chumash is setting up, because what's the main topic of Chumash? It's about God and man, isn't it? Chumash wants to understand what's special about man. And now let's read together how God makes man. Together for on Pasuk Ekek, on day 6, where it says 6b, where it says Pasuk Chavav, verse 26. Is it there again? Back on. Day 6. Okay, 6b. Look at the word in Hebrew, it's more important. What does God say? It says, Vayomer Elohim, in Pasuk Chavav, Naseh Adam Betzameinu Kibbutenu. What is God saying? There's something wrong with the Hebrew here, isn't there? When God, how's God been talking till now? Who has he been talking to? We mentioned that before. Who's God talking to all along? To himself. Who's he talking to now? You see the Hebrew? Now we have the plural Naseh Adam Betzameinu. Now, in Hebrew, is Elohim singular or plural? The word Elohim for God. Give me a plural verb in Hebrew. Give me any word in Hebrew, any noun. Yeah? What? Oh, okay. How do you say many tense? Ohalim. Any singular, what do I add to make a plural? Okay. Ben, bani. Got it? Rekha, raklanda, raklanda. Any word, you know that. You know that Hebrew, right? Now. What does Elohim mean? Is Elohim singular or plural? Well, in Hebrew it's plural, isn't it? What does it mean? Many powers. El means a power, something with strength, a power. Elohim means many powers. But what does Chumash do to the word Elohim? How come you said Elohim is singular? Because this is Vayomer. Wait, isn't there a problem in the Hebrew? It should say what? Vayomru Elohim. Wait, how many gods are there? One. Remember, one is Hashem, that's all. So how come God's name is plural? Doesn't make any sense, does it? Didn't you learn about monotheism? There's one God? So why is God's name plural if he's supposed to be one God? Well, how does God teach us, how does Scripture teach us that it's one God? It says Vayomer instead of Vayomru. You follow? Yeah, Rabbi Yehuda Levi, you've heard of him? Maybe? Yeah. Levi's a good name, last name for a rabbi. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
He explains beautifully. He says, that's how Chumash teaches you monotheism, by making a mistake in Hebrew. He says, how does Chumash teach you that there's one God? By using the word plural, Elohim, for many powers, and conjugating it in singular. Got it? Which is beautiful. And therefore, because what might people think? You ever read mythology? Pretend you were born way back a long time ago, before there was Bibles and things like that. And you saw nature. Doesn't it make sense that there's a sun god? Did any ancient culture think there was a sun god? Everyone did. And there's a moon god, there's a rain god, there's a fertility god, there's a war god, there's a thunder. There's There's a God for everything because they're powerful and they control your life. What's Chumash teaching you? What appears to be many gods is really one God. I'll tell you, this is a bad joke. People thought there was a sun god. The sun was a god. And what's Chumash teaching you? It's the son of God. Understand? God made the sun. It's not that the sun is its own god. God made the sun. That's the joke. It's the son of God. Wrong religion. Okay. No, seriously though, what happens though, when God makes man, we go back to the plural. Chumash is up to something, right? There's one time that Chumash uses the plural for God creating something, when God decides to make man. What's that indicate? God has a partner now. Who's God's partner? Man. Because how does God make man? B'tzelem Elokim, which means what? What's Tzelem Elokim mean? That's it. That's the buzzword now, isn't it? What's Tzelem Elokim mean? An image of God. What makes man like God? Who made man? But then some people think, are there some men who think they're gods? Lots of them, aren't there? What makes man think that sometimes he's like a god? If he has a lot of money, if he's powerful, if he's a giant. Understand? And what's Chumash telling you? That even though man is like a god, who made him? The sun looks powerful, but God made the sun. And man looks powerful, but who made man? God made man in whose image? In the image of God. B'tzelem Elohim. See the word B'tzelem Elohim? Now, what has Elohim been doing day by day? Listen carefully. What's Elohim been doing day by day? What's he doing? He's doing something new. He's being creative, isn't he? God made a lot of things. What's the very last thing that God made? No, that's the argument we had in the beginning. What's the last thing that God created?
Man.
And what can man do that no other animals can do? They can create things, can't they? Aren't humans creative? Now, but who gave man that ability to be creative, to be like God? Are you catching on to verse yet? Humans are different than animals, aren't they? Maybe not everyone. But everyone agrees humans are different than animals. How to define it? Ask your local philosopher. But humans are different than animals. And what humans can do is something that only God did beforehand. Because what does God do? God created from nothing. From something. But God's creator. What do? Humans are creative. Humans make airplanes. Humans make bad jokes. Humans make... Aren't they creative human beings? They made this building. They make lots of things. Humans are different than the rest of creation. They're the very last thing that God made. Did God ever finish creating or not? Well, did he rest from his creation? Creation is over with day seven. Do things continue to change? Well, certain things don't change. What do we call the things that don't change? That's called the laws of nature. Ask your physics class. In physics, you learn there's laws of nature. Who made the system? God. But there's one thing in that system that continues to be creative. Who's that? That's man. And we went from creation to civilization. You with me? We go from creation to civilization. Creation is over. God rested. What happens on Matzoy Shabbos? After Shabbat, what happens? Who takes over now? Now it's managed up to continue creation. Who gave him that ability? God. Now, is it really true that man is different than an animal? Where did they teach you in evolution class? Were they like a super duper ape? There's something to that, isn't there? Listen, let's go back to the parallel. You have a question?
I was just going to say that you can argue that some animals are also creative, like beavers.
And you're right, they're creative. The question is,
like,
the question, is it a question of magnitude? Is it a question of magnitude, or is it a question of a totally different being? You can argue that. But you agree with me that there's some basic differences between humans and animals? It could be they're only a couple million years behind us. And one day, animals will be making airplanes. It could be. But in the meantime, you agree with me that there's a quantum difference between man and animal. Just like what? Remember 3A to 3B? There's a connection between land and vegetation, but there's a link between land and vegetation, isn't there? From organic to inorganic, inorganic to organic. In a similar way, there's a link between animal to man. And that's what Chumash is teaching you. that don't think humans are just super duper apes. They might act like it sometimes. But there's something godly about every human being, which is reflecting his ability to be creative. Now, I have friends who have a beautiful custom to remember this. You know what they do? But they appreciate that God gave them the ability to be creative, that they're different, they may be more advanced, but there's something unique about man than everything else in creation. And what they do once a week, they stop all creativity. You ever see people like that? Who once a week, they stop all creativity to remember that there's a creator who made them. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? That's called Shabbat, isn't it? What can't you do on Shabbat? Well, you thought work, right? But what type of work can't you do? It's things that are creative that you can't do. But you'll see something really neat. You were talking about different beavers and humans?
Yeah.
Do beavers wear clothes?
No.
Do they make clothes?
They don't need clothes.
Yeah, okay. Do humans need clothes?
No.
That's an argument, but most humans are wearing clothes. Look around the room. Some more, some less. You understand? Every human being, normal human beings, need clothing, don't they? Okay. You guys just had breakfast, didn't you? The animals make Cheerios? You have Cheerios still? The animals make things like that? What do they eat for a living?
Raw stuff.
It's called hunter-gatherer. Animals eat whatever God provided them with. We read about that. They eat vegetation. They eat other animals, don't they? Do they process food? Is there any animal in his right mind that would plant a wheat and grow grain and then grind it up and make bread? No animal in the right mind would do that. You learned about that domestication of wheat? You guys are so used to it, you don't realize how complicated it is. What humans do for that loaf of bread, for that challah, look at all the work you do to have the donut. You have to plant a field. You gotta harvest the wheat. You gotta grind the wheat, don't you? You gotta make flour, then you gotta cook it. Why can't you just eat the grain? Or eat the grass or graze, got it? Do animals eat other animals?
Yeah.
Sure they do. Do humans eat other animals? Well, sort of, but what do we do that's different?
We farm them instead of
we burn them, we cook them, don't we? We cook meat. And then it's called a barbecue. You've seen them, haven't you? No other animal does that. If we make a steak, they'll eat it. If we make a donut, they'll eat it. But they don't make donuts. They don't make wheat. Are you with me? There's certain things where humans are very different than animals, aren't there? Again, how to define the difference? You can argue. But everyone agrees that they're different. In fact, you know what Maimonides, you've heard of him? He has a book called Moreno Bukhin, which is really complicated. Guide for Perplexed, you've heard of it? His very first topic is defining this word Tzelem Elokim. And you know how he defines Tzelem Elokim? He gives sort of a mathematical definition. He says, what's Tzelem Elokim? He says, take, you know the letter sigma in math? You learned that sigma means the sum total of something? He says, take sigma man minus sigma animal. Or basically, whatever the difference is between man and animal, that's your Tzelem Elokim. Now, that's something that man has to recognize to begin his relationship with God. That humans are different than animals, and that important difference between man and animal, that's how you connect to God. God gave you the ability to be creative. What do you do with your creativity? That's a big question. Are you supposed to be creative? Some people say you're supposed to work 6 days a week, correct? But what do you do with your creativity? Whatever you want, or do you need a guidebook? Remember we talked about creation and civilization? Once I go to creation to civilization, now man is in charge. What does man need? Man needs a guidebook about what you do with your creativity. And we call that revelation. What's that mean, revelation? The Torah? Man needs a guidebook. What do I do with my creativity? Should I be? Yeah, question?
Yeah, isn't it a little self-aggranding to say that humans are like different than all other animals, even though there are qualities that some animals have that are better than humans? Like,
you're right. Being different doesn't mean you're better. The goal is not to be better. Same thing about being Jewish. You're not better, but you're different.
Right.
Because I read, when Shabbos was over, I heard someone say, Hamavdil ben Kodesh ben Orloch. We talk about someone who's divided between day and night, between holy and unholy, between Israel and the other nations. It's called dignity of difference. But The nature of nature, they're different species, aren't they? Didn't you notice that?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of nature, its complexity, but the beauty that every, you ever learn about the food chain? You see, like, Finding Nemo?
Yeah.
If you learn about ecology, the system that God made is amazing, but in order for the system to work, there needs to be many different species. And each one eats its other. And in the same way, there's different nations, and there needs to be many nations. And every nation has its purpose. And every just like humans have to realize they're different. And if God picks a nation, we have to realize that we're different. Not that we're better, but the idea that you're chosen for a reason, then what do you do with your individuality? What do you do and how you're different? The goal is not that you're better than others, but what do you do with your ability to be creative? Do I take my creativity and use it in a positive way? I have to do good. But that's the rest of the total. What do I do with my creativity? How do I do good? I can be creative, but do I do things that are good or do things that are bad? Can I do whatever I want? Or do I have limits? Or do I have guidance? I need a guidebook now. And that'll be Torah. Now, I want to go back to the things we do on Shabbat to remind us of Shabbat. There's a lot of things you can't do on Shabbat, like there's 39 melachot. You've heard of them? You ever study them in school, the things you can't do on Shabbat? If you look at them very carefully, then all the things that you can't do on Shabbat are almost all the things that make humans different than animals. The whole process of making bread, it's called Sidur Lepat. Did you ever make bread before? You never made it from scratch, did you? You just that'll go to the bakery. But you'd have to plant a field, plant wheat, let it grow, harvest it in the spring, you know, separate those little grains, and then winnow it, and finally get those grains, and then you grind it, and then you make flour, and then you have to add water to it, and then you make dough, and then you bake it. The laws of Shabbat begin with planting, don't they? Look, there's like, I think, how many melachot are there on Shabbat? Over 10, right? Of the whole process of making,
11.
Of making 11, right? 11. Of making bread. Making clothing. Aren't there melachot of making clothing? The whole thing of weaving? The whole clothing is all about Shabbat. It's all, because humans are different because we need clothing. God made us that way. But those indicate our differences. Killing animals and cooking them. That whole process of Shkitah. And then burning and cooking an animal, be sure. That's also part of how we're different. Constructing a home. Like building a structure. Industry, making light. Making, like lighting a fire for a purpose. And then the whole idea of industry, making tools. Again, beavers make simple tools. I'm talking about making airplanes. I'm talking about complex industry. Animals talk and communicate. We've never seen an animal that writes an essay and passes it down for 500 years later people to read. Called writing things. Isn't writing one of the melachot we can't do on Shabbat? But creative writing, writing that carries a message. It's got to be a word that conveys a message. Taking your thoughts and writing them down and conveying them to the next generation. That only humans do, as far as we know. Yeah, I'm not saying other animals might be more intelligent. Lots of animals are more intelligent than humans. Humans do really stupid things. They kill each other. They do, they even think that there's not, some humans even come up with this idea that there's no God. Like, sometimes humans do stupid things, but humans have this ability to be creative. And what we need to do is remember that even though we're creative and we're like God, we have this power to be like God, someone gave us that power. Our ability to be creative, our tzelem elokim, is a gift from God. And once a week, what do we need to do? We need to remember that ability to be creative is a gift from God and remember what to do with it. Because you're supposed to work 6 days a week. Now remember our first question. Is resting from work part of work? Do you understand the philosophy behind it? If I work and never stop to reflect, have I done anything? Ask your philosophy teacher. You follow? But part of working is what? Taking a break. It's called chofesh. It's chofesh. That's called chofesh. No fish in Hebrew. Okay. For those who know Hebrew, there's two words for vacation in Hebrew. There's chofesh and there's no fish. Chofesh comes from free, freedom. No fish means rest. Now, if you're a CEO one day of a big company, and you have lots of workers, you'll know that the output of your workers will be much better if you give them a vacation. They even pay for vacations, go to a retreat. Because part of work is resting. You know what rest is? It gives you time to reflect on what you did, and gives you time to think about what you're gonna do next. Resting from work is part of work. It's part of creativity. It's like, it happens when sleep does as well. You need, when you're working, part of rest. So if you go back to that question, day number seven, God didn't create anything, did he? Because how do we know there's no Vayera Elohim, there's no Vayera Vayboker? But the creation ends with God resting. Because if you don't reflect on what you're doing, you can't continue to go forward. And the story of creation isn't coming to tell you how God created. Because the story doesn't make sense in reality. But the story of creation is explaining to you what's the meaning of life, what's the meaning of being human, what's the meaning of your creativity, and how important it is to remember that God gave you that ability to be creative and what you do with your creativity. And we need to take a break once a week and stop all creativity. Now, how we do that, that's called halakha, that's complicated. But I want you to notice that all the things that we don't do on Shabbat are all things that remind us that we're different than animal. And we have to appreciate it. It's nothing wrong with being an animal. But our ability to be creative and use our creativity properly. Now, how to interpret how to be a good Jew? You follow? How to be a good human, we can argue. But the idea to want to do good, that's a good word. Who said good? Remember, every day was good? But there's something good. How do we know what good is? We argue about it. But we should argue. And we try to refine that. But at least our goal is to do good. Part of doing good is arguing what is good. That's part of life. That's part of civilization. But our ability to think about that and strive for that, the only human experience of what it means to be human, to be creative, is the essence of being, it's the beginning, it's the start of being spiritual, being connected to God. And that's what said the little king. Now, one last thing, there's a place called the temple. You've heard of the temple, right? What do we do in the temple? We pray. We'll talk about prayer later if we have time. But don't we bring that? All the things we do in the temple are reminding ourselves of how we're different than animals. Remember, only animals have clothing? I mean, only we have clothing, animals don't? Is there a big deal about clothing? When you get to, you ever study Sefer Shemot about the Mishkan? Isn't there a big deal about clothing? The priestly garments? Do we make a big deal about bread in the temple? Do we show it off? What do we call that bread? Show bread, or lechem apanim. Do we make a big deal about wine? Remember, wine is processed. No animal makes wine. To take grapes and crush them and let them sit in a barrel, and then drink it 20 years later and charge money for it? And pretend you're having a good time? You got it? Only humans do something so, I mean, so smart. Yeah. Animals might drink it if we make it, but that's human. Remember, we take animals, we don't just kill them, we burn them like meat. We have a cookout, like a barbecue. There's everything we do in the temple that when animals, we take domesticated animals. Remember the two main jobs of man if you learn anthropology one day, they have that in school? Yeah. What begins civilization? Now they define civilization begins with domesticating wheat and animals, correct? About 10,000 years ago or so, which is biblical history. But that begins Sedem Elokim, you got it? Civilization begins when man is different than animal. He domesticates wheat, domesticates animals, makes a business out of it. Why? We don't know. That's what happened. But all the things that we're doing, we're reminding ourselves we're different than animals, and we have this ability to be creative. We show off our bread, we show off our industry, we have light. And I end with one thing that we do. We have a beautiful custom. We know about Shabbat, don't we? How do we begin Shabbat? We light candles, don't we? We turn night, we turn into day. It's night out, we light a candle. At night, there's day. Vayera Vayboker. Only humans do that. We take domesticated wheat, right? And we show it off. What do we call that? We take processed grapes, we have wine. It's all the things that inaugurate Shabbat are things that remind us of things that we're human and not animal. And we're different. And there's a special blessing for things that only humans do, called bread pregetet, as opposed to bread pregets. And there's hamotzi lechem min haaretz, even though we do the whole thing. So that's the idea of Shabbat. Shabbat is, I need a story of creation to appreciate that woman. Yeah. I need a story of creation with Chumash, not to tell me how God did it. How God did it, Astrid's big bang theory, whatever it might be. Why God did it is important. And therefore, all the things we do on Shabbat are going to remind us of the blessing God gave us to be creative. How do you use your creativity? That'll be the Torah. Thank you very much.
Don't move, Jesse. First of all, I just want to give my very big thanks, and also to Rabbi Kalman for our motion for thanking and making this possible. You have the last word.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on behalf of all of Chad's crew.
Thank you so much. Good day.